From Altoona to York, Waynesburg to Irwin, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, with a July 1st budget deadline, the last week of June saw a flurry of activity under the Capitol Dome. Matt Briette from Commonwealth Partners Chamber of Entrepreneurs is here to host a Capitol Watch discussion. And with his veto of additional funding for the popular Education Improvement Tax Credit Program, Governor Wolf has sentenced tens of thousands of students to languish in failed schools. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first we have news headlines from patownhall.com. Adding to an already crowded field of contenders, former Pennsylvania Congressman Joe Sestak announced his candidacy for the 2020 Democratic presidential nomination. Sestak, a retired three-star naval admiral, becomes the 25th and one of the least known contenders to enter the race. Polls show former Vice President Joe Biden with an early lead. However, it is still early in the process as the first round of debates were held just this past week. Pennsylvania Republicans are looking for a new leader after GOP State Chairman Val DiGiorgio resigned this past week. The longtime activist departed his post in the wake of an explosive Philadelphia Inquirer article about alleged inappropriate communications he had with a former city council candidate. The Republican State Committee will meet within the next 45 days to select a new chairman who will lead the party into the 2020 presidential election. Several significant changes to how Pennsylvanians vote in elections are being considered by the General Assembly. One proposal advancing through the state Senate would allow for so-called open primaries, meaning voters can vote in whatever party primary they choose without regard to which party they are actually registered. The Senate is also considering an end to straight party voting. Voters would have to cast ballots for each office individually in a general election rather than pushing one button for a single party. Pennsylvania State House of Representatives has approved a resolution supporting the new U.S.-Canada-Mexico trade agreement negotiated by the Trump administration. On a party-line vote, the House supported the agreement after Democrats attempted to derail the resolution by injecting a minimum wage discussion into the debate. House GOP leader Brian Cutler argued that the agreement would render minimum wage irrelevant since the point of the pact is to create and preserve higher-paying jobs in the United States. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. The new state budget has moved relatively smoothly through the General Assembly, but more interesting is what did not happen as the legislature prepares for a two-month summer recess. Here to parse through the issues is our Capitol Watch crew, Matt Briette from the Commonwealth Partners Chamber of Entrepreneurs, Rebecca Euler from the National Federation of Independent Business, and Carl Marrera from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. Matt?
Welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening in the Capitol for you. I'm Matt Briette, President of Commonwealth Partners Chamber of Entrepreneurs, and I'm joined by Carl Marrera, Vice President of Government Affairs at the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association.
Good to be with you, Matt.
Glad to have you, Carl. And Rebecca Euler is Legislative Director of NFIB, the Small Business Advocate. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi, great to be here.
Good to have both of you. That we are concluding silly season in Harrisburg, and that is when you give a bunch of politicians billions of dollars and tell them, well, go figure out how to spend this. So the haggling, the horse trading has been going on for a little bit now. It's kind of where the way that they do this is they run up to the 11th hour, right? And then demand votes on hundreds and hundreds of pages of things. Sometimes things get sneaked in there that we aren't aware of. But we're going to do a little bit of a play here on what we know here as things are being concluded. Kind of the good, the bad, and the ugly. And hopefully at the end of the show, you won't be depressed, but you'll say, all right, we've got some good things. There's some bad, but you know, these ugly things, why are we still doing this? So kind of let's kick off with just your overall take, Carl, on this budget season. It's not, you know, an election year, so usually there's other kinds of pressures. But I think probably the biggest news in this is that we went from a 1.5 or something back in December billion-dollar deficit to where a booming Trump economy turned into over $900 million surplus in state revenues. I think that probably changed the game for what this budget season was going
to
be like.
Yeah, this is, to me, a same old song and dance budget. And they're just taking the revenues that are coming in and matching the expenditures to it. The problem is that the revenues that are coming in are much higher than they've been in the past. And what's the reason for that? Well, that's a strong national economy. Now, I will say, though, Pennsylvania's economy is not growing at the rate of our competitor states. And there's a reason for that. And a same old song and dance budget is very much one of those reasons.
I heard someone describe it as a cut and paste. They just basically took last year's budget, cut and pasted it in for this oncoming budget. Rebecca, what's your take on kind of the overall budget season here? And then we'll get into the good, the bad, the ugly.
Okay, well, Carl's right. I mean, it was a lot easier. It sort of greases the wheels when there's actually money to spend. But it is problematic because we're actually covering some of the cost overruns from last year. So some of those additional revenues that we're seeing come in are actually having to cover the cost overruns from last year. So we're sort of perpetuating into next year. We don't want to see cost overruns again, but I'm not sure that they're anticipating that, and as they were last year, having cost overruns and having to cover that at the end of the budget season.
Yeah, so, we'll get into that with the ugly part of this, because this has been an ongoing issue. And a real problem. But Rebecca, as you look at this budget, it is about $34 billion general fund budget. And we always have to remind our listeners that that's only a portion of the overall spending in the state. There's another 50 some odd billion dollars that is spent through other funds, things that are shifted out of the general fund budget. Like when we pay our gas taxes, they go into a motor license fund that's outside the general fund budget. Or the lottery, when you know, try to win the Powerball, Rebecca, that all those dollars you waste on that go right into the lottery.
I'm still gonna win.
Good luck. That goes into the lottery fund. So, and these things don't have appropriations for them. So there's, you know, over $80 billion that is spent every year. But the haggling is really over the $34 billion spending number. What's the good in it? Where do you see the good in this budget, despite it being sort of a ho-hum, cut-and-paste plan?
Well, the one thing I would highlight as good is that we know our biggest problem for businesses in the state, both small and large, is finding qualified employees. This is by far the biggest problem that businesses are having. There just aren't enough. Unemployment is low, and there aren't enough qualified people out there who have the right training and expertise to take the jobs that are open. So we do see a focus in this budget on workforce development, and there is new funding and more focused funding specifically on programs for training the workforce to take the jobs that are out there and are open right now. So that's a good thing. Glad to see some focus at the state level on solving that problem.
Okay. Carl, what do you see in this budget that pleases you?
A lot of the good comes in the form of defense. And it's kind of unfortunate, but at least we have a firewall in the General Assembly to block the things that the governor proposed. So you have to rewind back to his budget address back in February. He proposed unprecedented minimum wage increase, a government-mandated wage increase, up to what would be $15 an hour, putting Pennsylvania at one of the highest rates in the nation. And that's just not sustainable for small businesses, for large businesses, with the inflation that would create. And the legislature has effectively blocked that. And for that, we're very grateful. The other thing that he proposed is a program that he calls Restore PA, which is really just you know, a different set of clothes on the same old bandit. And
last program we called it mortgage PA because it's the get the money today and pay it off over the next 30 years.
Exactly. It's absolutely foolish, and it would have resulted in the highest in the nation additional tax on energy production, which would have put Pennsylvania at a serious competitive disadvantage on other states that are producing energy. And again, the legislature has not entertained any kind of proposal regarding that. And again, for that, we're thankful.
So good is kind of stopping the minimum wage. And I know for your members, Rebecca, that's big. And
yes.
In fact, I think one of the arguments that was successfully made is, look, a booming economy actually raises wages far better than government mandates from
right.
Harrisburg. And I mean, the number of people paying 7.25, they're having the trouble, as you talked about, even hiring people. But other than the minimum wage, and if you want to comment on that, feel free. But are there other things in there that you'd say were the good?
Sure. Well, with regard to minimum wage, I think one of the primary arguments that won the day with those who were able to block it in this budget was that it does impact small businesses, and particularly in rural areas where the cost of living is lower. So we are really – I'll join Carl in being very pleased that just didn't seem to come together, thankfully, this budget season. So really happy about that. It does help small businesses.
The best way to handle a minimum wage increase is to do exactly what the legislature did, and that's expand and enhance the funding for workforce development programs.
Right.
That's how you create careers. That's how you create family-sustaining jobs. It's not through government saying that you must pay somebody $15 an hour. It's through getting people into programs to train them how to be plumbers, how to be welders, how to be HVAC technicians. And those are the family-sustaining jobs that are really going to move and shift an economy forward.
Right. And what we hear from employers is a lot of the folks who even have some of the hard skills are lacking in soft skills. So they haven't worked in a workplace necessarily before where they've had to, you know, show up to work on time and you know, work with people in the office and work for a boss, those types of things. Minimum wage jobs or close to minimum wage are the jobs where people learn those skills. So keeping those jobs available to young people especially is critical to solving part of the workforce development crisis.
Workforce development has been the political buzzword of this legislative session. I'm glad that they're putting their money where their mouth is.
So if you are Governor Wolf, I want you to try to think like him other than wanting to raise all sorts of taxes. As you look at this budget, what do you say? Here are the good things that what is he going to go out there and tout as a win? Because he didn't get the major things that he's been pushing. You know, he's been a dog with a old shoe on the severance tax. He didn't get that in this.
Well, honestly, some of those things are going to be kind of brought up in the ugly part of this discussion. But, I mean, as far as kind of transitioning from, you know, what was good to what is bad, I know one thing that Governor Wolf is going to tout is that he expanded or enhanced the funding for education.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you,
right.
He had an opportunity to expand education in a way that would really help, especially those lowest performing or the students in those lowest performing schools. And Matt, I know this is an issue you are really passionate about.
Yeah, indeed. And he did get hundreds of millions of dollars more in public school funding, which is something that he always asked for. It seems Republicans are always for that. But you're listening to Capital Watch. I'm Matt Briette, president of Commonwealth Partners. Carl Morera, vice president of government affairs at PMA. Rebecca Euler, legislative director at NFIB, is with me here. Carl, you touched on the bad. And while the Education Improvement Tax Credit grew by $25 million, the bad part of this is that the House and the Senate passed a $100 million increase this year. Unfortunately, Governor Wolf vetoed that. And the reason that this increase was needed is the demand is so high. There are 50,000 kids that low income in crummy schools that want an educational lifeline. And he denied them that. And it is unfortunate that the House and Senate leaders did not fight on behalf of those kids to make sure that there were more lifelines thrown to them to escape schools that just are not performing or are simply unsafe. Carl, what do you see in here that's bad? What other things?
One of the things that I want to focus on that's bad is just something that's not in it. And that it's dealing with our obsolete business tax structure. Here's the bottom line. Pennsylvania's capping of net operating loss at 40% is an outlier. We're one of only two states that place any cap at all. This is especially important to high-tech business investment and heavy industrial investment, both of which the governor and the legislature claim to want to bring more of to Pennsylvania. Add that to the fact that we are the third highest corporate net income tax rate in the nation at 9.99%, and it's a flag on every site selection survey for the nation's top companies not to invest, not to expand, or not to locate in Pennsylvania
like
compared
closed,
to our competitors.
Yeah, it's like a closed for business sign that we erect around our
and
state.
And they talked about lowering this rate, whether it be through reducing some of the tax programs and incentives that are out there, or even just doing it on its own merit like other states have done. Lawmakers are touting a strong national economy that surged Pennsylvania's returns, and they aren't wrong. Sales tax returns are up 7%. Personal income tax returns are up nearly 6%. And actually, corporate net income taxes are up over 20%. But we as a state are not growing even close to as fast as our competitor states. And, you know, my best advice to Governor Wolf and the General Assembly is to look at states that have reformed their corporate tax structure. States like Utah, North Carolina, even New York that have implemented some positive changes to bring investment to their states. Business investment is like water. It will flow to the path of least resistance. We know that through the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that the lowering of tax rates can actually bring about more tax revenue and spur economic growth. We need to do it here too. And this budget just doesn't do that. That being said, I hate when we couple tax debates with budget expenditures. And there's still an opportunity to push for meaningful corporate tax reform in the fall or early in the next – in the year, in the next legislative session. Or it's the same legislative session, just start of a new year. But time is of the essence because that reshored capital from the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act is coming back to the U.S., but it's not coming here. And corporate taxes aren't the only issue that really weren't taken up, were they, Rebecca?
No, that's absolutely right. And to the extent you're making the case that our net operating loss for corporations is an outlier, there are several areas where we are an outlier for small business taxes as well. In fact, we're pushing a three-bill package that would just make some very simple changes to the state tax code that would put us on par with other states and with corporate taxpayers too. So these are for businesses that pay their business taxes through their personal income tax. It's called pass-through entities. So not corporations, but those small businesses who are paying their taxes through their personal income taxes. Now, Carl will talk about net operating loss for corporations being limited to 40%. Small businesses can't take net operating loss at all in Pennsylvania. So this would allow a small business to deduct a loss that it might have in 1 year against income and in subsequent years. So it's really helpful for startup companies or for companies that have like cyclical business or maybe impacted by the weather, for example. So if you have a small company that does tours and they're impacted by the weather, they have a loss, they could potentially deduct that loss against their taxes in subsequent years. So we would really like to see that for small businesses in Pennsylvania. It's already permitted under federal law, and it's capped for corporations, but we'd just like to see it, you know, permitted altogether for small business.
It's missed opportunities,
yes,
right? The opportunity is to really make Pennsylvania a destination for capital, as you noted, Carl, a place that is creating educational opportunities for kids to escape schools that just aren't working for them. So all of these kind of missed opportunities are the bad. But there's some ugly things in here. The first is, which is an unfortunate component of every budget, is really a misrepresentation of the spending increase. And this happens almost every year. It's unfortunate. It's because everybody wants to look like a fiscal steward, right? So they manipulate the numbers. And the way that they always do this is that they have something called supplemental appropriations. And basically what this means is that somebody overspent the budget for the month and now have to pay those bills off. And Governor Wolf did that to the tune of over $670 million that he said to the legislature, oops, we need money to pay this off. And so what they did is they then reset the spending, the budget level, or the expenditures for the fiscal year, and then decided to calculate the growth from that new number, mm-hmm. an additional, you know, two-thirds of $1 billion, and then call it an only a 1.8 increase. But the ugly is that this is actually a 4.7% increase, far exceeding inflation and population growth. And so those are the ugly things in this, because when you keep overspending like this, you're one day, the Trump economy, as we're experiencing right now, is going to peter out. And when they keep spending in this manner, one day, and it might be election year next year, who knows what happens in the economy, that they're going to have to make the tough decisions that, frankly, that they refuse to make this year.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know if this is an anomaly or if it's going to be a trend. And, you know, to do a 4.7% increase with the risk of the economy turning southward is not a risk that I'm really willing to take.
Yeah.
So that could cause some serious problems down the road, and that's exactly what we're trying to avoid.
Well, one of the other things that I would call as the ugly is the continual shift of monies out of the general fund budget into the shadow budgets. That's where they move it out of the site. There's no appropriation, but creating funds. They apparently shifted about a quarter of $1 billion, $220 million, into the shadow budget. So that also is how they manipulate the growth numbers. But of course, we know it's all the taxpayers' money, and when they're spending like this. Anything else that you guys add as we wrap up here?
Well, we haven't talked about the rainy day fund. Maybe just
yeah,
a quick
actually
mention
a good
of that.
Thing, right?
That was
yeah.
a good thing. Yeah, they actually are adding at least $250 million rainy day fund,
which is just setting aside money
for that downturn,
that rainy day, right?
Right, right. Which Pennsylvania has the second lowest budgetary reserve fund in the country. So adding some money to that is a good thing.
Well, on that note, we're going to end on a good one, Rebecca. You got that last word.
All right,
because
good.
We've run out of time. I know we could go on. But Carl Marrera of PMA and Rebecca Euler of NFIB. I'm Matt Briette of Commonwealth Partners. Thank you for joining me, all of you. And thanks for listening to Capital Watch. Now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Harrisburg is the epitome of a dysfunctional, failed urban school district. Its residents are saddled with high property taxes, while graduation rates languish at or near the bottom of Pennsylvania's 500 school districts. The political culture of the district is chaotic and divisive, while successive administrations have proven to be, shall we say, not up to the task. It seems virtually everything possible has been tried to cure the Harrisburg School District of its chronic problems. In the early 2000s, then-Harrisburg Mayor Stephen R. Reed was placed in control of the district. At the beginning of this decade, a chief recovery officer was appointed to deal with the district's financial woes. In mid-June, a Dauphin County judge, acting on a request from the State Department of Education, removed control of the district from the elected school board and appointed a receiver. Educational achievement, predictably, has suffered. As a result, those who could have moved out of the city into neighboring school districts to provide their children with a better education. Those children without such parental support, or whose parents cannot afford to move, remain trapped in failed schools. If students anywhere would benefit from K-12 educational alternatives, including school choice, cyber schools, or charter schools, it would be those of the Harrisburg School District. Throughout the decades of chaos, a succession of elected school boards has been hostile to charter schools, fighting rather than fostering such opportunities. Students can still enroll in cyber charter schools, but money remains a barrier. Financial help is available, but it is limited, more limited than it should be. The Education Improvement Tax Credit, EITC, is one state program that has proven to be highly effective in bringing private contributions into the scholarship mix. The EITC provides companies with a tax credit for donations made to a nonprofit scholarship or educational improvement organization. Since its inception in 2001, the EITC program has been a financial and educational lifeline for students and their families. The problem is, a limited amount of money has been included in the state budget to finance the tax credits awarded to companies that make scholarship donations. Last year, nearly 49,000 student scholarship applications were turned down due to lack of funding. This while more than $100 million in company donations were rejected because the fund had reached its cap. To correct this problem, the General Assembly passed a bill that would have allocated additional state tax dollars to the EITC program, which would have greatly expanded educational opportunities for low- and middle-income students. Governor Tom Wolf vetoed the bill. Wolf said, in his view, the EITC program is, quote, not something I think is good for Pennsylvania. That rhetoric is different from his actions when he was in the private sector. According to the Commonwealth Foundation, a company of which Tom Wolf was CEO donated $60,000 through the EITC program and received $54,000 in tax credits. Wolf, who himself attended elite private schools, said his goal is, quote, educating every child through our public school system, end quote. It should be noted that increasing funding for the EITC program would not have come at the expense of public education. The dollars the General Assembly wanted to allocate were in addition to public school funding. Given these facts, the governor's veto makes no sense. That is, until you factor in the political component. The Pennsylvania State Education Association, or PSEA, is the state's largest teacher union, and it aggressively opposes any legislation which threatens its monopoly on K-12 education. The PSEA was one of the largest financial contributors to both of Governor Tom Wolf's campaigns for office, so, as the saying goes, follow the money. Politicians doing the bidding of their big donors is neither new nor rare. Such actions range from the illegal to the merely shady. To satisfy the union bosses, Governor Tom Wolf has thrown thousands of students into the education dustbin. He has trapped yet another generation of children in failing schools. He has built a wall across their pathway out of poverty. That he was willing to sacrifice these children's opportunity for a better future on the altar of union politics is much worse than business as usual. It is downright immoral. With a town hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 24 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WWBE-FM and WFYY-FM in Selins Grove, along with WISL-AM in Shamokin, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.
We'll be right back.